Sajun. So if we have any new friends joining us for the first time, like Bhante said, you may ask questions by raising your hand, or you can also send them to me anonymously via chat. Bhante, I think we're probably going to get to this later on, but, you know, given most of us probably work very, you know, busy jobs, and mental proliferation is a part of the requirement to do those jobs. Is there anything we could do during our working days to continue the practice?
Yeah. So actually, I can't agree with you telling that mental proliferation is a requirement. Because mental proliferation is something that we all have, that it's a kind of a tendency we all have, but it is not a requirement. So that is where the practice is quite helpful. So the practice shows us how unnecessarily we get on to too much thinking. And ultimately we become victimized to that very thinking. So that is where we are kind of becoming a slave to mental proliferation. So mental proliferation part, slowly we have to overcome, we have to reduce. And as I mentioned in the previous times, so when it is necessary, we can think. That thinking also happens under our purview, under our supervillains. Now that is possible. Now say you are thinking about the future. Suppose you are given a task to design something. Now you need to recognize what are the other designs available, what are the say future prospects available, and what are the models available, different competitive brands available. So likewise, there may be various aspects that you have to look into. Definitely this involves a fair amount of thinking. But you are thinking properly. You are thinking methodically. So your thinking didn't overpower yourself. So you can make use of thinking. Thinking is an extremely valuable skill we all human beings have. So we can use the power of thinking. But we are not allowing thinking to overpower ourselves. So under our control, we do the thinking. So on other terms, what I am trying to tell is you are mindful while you are thinking. It is not that you completely lost your mindfulness. So you are very well mindful that at the moment I am planning something. I am thinking about the future. I am thinking about a particular aspect. I am thinking about a competitive product, whatever it is. So likewise, you are so the thinking process happens under the supervision of your mindfulness. And suppose if it is taking over power, now you have to apply brakes. That indicates that you are reducing, or you have lost your mindfulness and the thinking is overpowering you. So that is what we need to avoid. Now, in order to do that, we have to have a fair amount of mindfulness, and mindfulness is in the front end. So it is always in the upper, taking the upper hand. So that is why Buddha mentioned, Satadipateya sabbe dhamma. Among all the various qualities, among all the various phenomena, mindfulness is the best, or mindfulness is the chief. So if we are giving that position, if we are giving that respect to the mindfulness, so mindfulness can somewhat supervise the mind. So under its supervision, thinking is going on. We are making use of our thinking. That is a skill, as I mentioned. Now, while that thinking going on, you supervise the mind. Okay? Now this guy is thinking about this. Now this guy is thinking about this. Now this fellow is thinking about this. Doesn't matter. It still happens under my control. So it is not gone to the level of you being a victim of that very thinking. So therefore, on the other hand, suppose now you come across various different designs, different aspects, and you have analyzed all the possibilities, and now you want to stop this planning part. Now you want to accumulate all this information and to put into a schedule, put into a diagram, put into a kind of an analysis, Now you are doing that task. Now you can do that. Suppose you completed that. And now you want to present. Now you are making a presentation. Now you are doing that. Suppose you have completed that. Now you want to stop. Are you able to stop your mind now? So these are in a way quite interesting and practical aspects how we can use our practice. Because once you have complete the task totally, assume now you simply have to present it to the audience, to your colleagues, to your say management, whoever it is. Now you simply have to present it. Now till that, can't you keep your mind quiet? Because the time has not come to present it. Suppose it is on tomorrow, but now you are ready. Can you keep your mind quiet? Because now you are not designing. Your design has completed now and you are confident. It is done well and you spend a fair amount of time and you did a nice job. And now you want to stop thinking. So at this time, again you are thinking, again you are mentally proliferate. So that indicates our lack of mindfulness, our weaknesses in our practice. So therefore, Buddha doesn't say that we should not think. Rather, he say, when it is necessary, when it is beneficial, one can think. And when it is not necessary, and when it is unnecessary, when it is not essential, you can keep your mind quiet. So that is the point we want to understand. So therefore, mental proliferation is not a must. And it is a kind of a weakness that we all have. And the tendency in ourselves is to proliferate. So that we have to admit that all the beings, not only human beings, even the celestial beings, have that tendency. So we are fond of thinking. We are fond of mental proliferation. So that we have to understand as to recognize as a weakness we all have. And we have to apply our practice to overcome that weakness. So I think if we are practicing Vipassana particularly, so we have to experience a reduction of mental proliferation, then only we can see we are in the proper path.
Thank you for making that distinction between thinking and mental proliferation. So Bhante, is it true to say that thinking is not necessarily a bad thing or a departure from our practice as long as it is done mindfully?
Yeah, I can agree with you. So we are doing mindfully and we are doing it for purpose. We know the benefit of thinking at the moment. As I mentioned, as an example, if there is a purpose, if there is a benefit of thinking, so probably you can make use of it. But if there is no purpose, it is not useful, and you want to keep your mind quiet, then it is no point of thinking. Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes it's not so clear whether our thinking is actually beneficial or not. So I guess that is part of the wisdom part of the process.
Yes. Actually, that is true. Because our mind has another tendency called restlessness and again regrets. So those are the hindrances, uddaccha kukkuccha. So that actually cannot eliminate immediately. Uddaccha kukkuccha only eliminated after becoming an arahant. So you can see how interwoven these hindrances are. So they have become some sort of characteristics of the mind. So the restlessness and the regretting about what has happened, regretting about that you couldn't do something good. So those regrets, repentance, and all these things are very much like human nature. And we have to understand that. And again, by that understanding, we can overcome them gradually. And we will be successful only after we become an arahant. So till that, bear to some extent, we have to sort of have some self-compassion. That mind is involved in this useless kind of thinking sometimes. It is jumping here and there, restlessness is there. So likewise, we have to admit that certain shortcomings are still available. Even though I am practicing well, still there are many shortcomings available. So, but I am working on it. I'm not completely defeated. Rather, the practice is helping. Say, for example, say a month ago, you were in a one level. So assume that you were thinking too long and too much. But now today, if you compare to your previous state, you probably might recognize some sort of an improvement, kind of a controllability or kind of a restraint in your mind. So even though thinking happens, it is not too close or too gross. So it may mean it has become at least subtle, not much bothering. But previously, they have come to the very surface of the mind, where they are very much like intruded to the mind. So you are completely under control of that thinking and you are becoming a complete victim of that thinking. But now, as a result of practice, it's very much like the thinking is there, but it is still available in the background. That does not disturb your sort of main activity of the mind. So likewise, it's a kind of a gradual improvement happens, and we have to slowly address the issue.
Thank you.
I like to invite Patricia. Please ask the next question.
Yes, Pante. Now, I like to ask. This is not kind of a question, but you know how we going through the process at the moment. This is related to the explanation we have done today. Now, if we look at like, now we keep on trying our best to, you know, be mindful, we practice, do our daily practice. And so we sometimes hear or sometimes listen to the news, and then we get the eye contacted with some kind of a form. Probably
saying because we are Mahesha, can I disturb you for a moment? I have to close the windows. I am experiencing some rain. Give me a minute, huh?
Yes. Something bad, there we go, we get the attachment, okay, this is happening in Sri Lanka, and we contact that with our, you know, feeling sense, and then we start, you know, the contact lead us to feel. So feeling is these days like, you get, you know, be like, because of the attachment, you feel like, oh, it's dukkha, you know, people are suffering, things like that. Then usual times. And then at that point, if we can break that chain of going through the perception of, you know, perceiving it, whether it's sorrow or happiness or something like that, if we can think about at that point of feeling, I'm looking at the diagram that we saw actually talking. So then we can be okay, that is it. Why I felt like that, because I attached to, though I'm physically away from the country, but still I attached to it, and looking at the people. But taking on the other hand, not only Sri Lanka, but there are other developing countries and also developed countries where people are suffering, but we such don't feel it as such. We hear the news, but we don't feel it as such, because the attachment to the other countries and to Sri Lanka is different. We have taken it differently to ourselves. So that's the difference. And if we can then be mindful and think, okay, this is it. So that's why it's happening, and that's what the Buddha said, that it's, if you take everything into account, if you look at it in a correct way, or what would you say, the natural way, that it's dukkha. Although we turn it as, yes, that's true, that's happiness, and there's nothing called happiness as such. So if we can make up our mind, so that breaking point, as you explained a while ago, is the being mindful. So if once when we get the mindfulness, the way that I'm looking at it is, we have to do a U-turn. So then go backwards, okay, where are the contact happens? So I felt it, that's why, so feeling, and then backwards, going backwards, where the contact happens. Okay, this is the place the contact happened, I heard it, there from the television news or whatever news, and then can go to again to the place that's nothing. So is that a good way to look at it, or just in that place of feeling, you break it, be mindful and think, okay, yes, it's happening, that's it, I don't have to let a story over it and move forward to the next stage of thinking and then doing mental proliferation. So that's what I was thinking, because the degree of attachment makes you feel and then move on with the rest of the story and then do it back to you. But if you can understand in a particular point and break that chain, probably you can either go take a U-turn and go backward, or you can then just stop it from there. I know it's a lot of practice is needed, but that's the way how I understood. Is that correct?
Actually, you are correct. So that is what mentioned here in the as what we discussed today. So we have this like and dislike. So like and dislike is there. So it has become sort of internal property in our mind. So as you said, so you have kind of a like towards your country. So we all have that. And to another country, you don't have that much of a like, that kind of a respect, say, we can say. So there's a kind of an inclination towards your country. There's a kind of a inherent sort of even gratitude or maybe inclination, attachment. So those are there when it comes to a particular country, to your own parents, to your own children. So these are the sort of accepted things. But on the other hand, when we see another country, when we see another person, when we see another neighbor, so we don't have that much of an attachment towards them. So as a result of that, we are not getting into any trouble. So the ones we are too closely holding, the ones we are too much attached, is the one causing us more trouble. So as you said, so when the Sri Lanka is going through some kind of a trouble, you feel it. But suppose India is now going through some trouble, you are not feeling it that much. But everywhere is human beings, but we can't see that picture. But we have a special attachment to our own country. And as a result of that, when that particular country people is suffering and they're going through some sort of decline or whatever it is, then we are also going to suffer. So I can accept what you are telling, and it is well explained in the sutta as well. So actually, we are to address. So we have to admit that these likes and dislikes what we have. So in other terms, what we can understand is that certain tendencies in all we have. So I have a kind of a tendency towards this person. When I am talking with this particular person, I have kind of a tendency to get angry. When I am talking with this particular person, I have a tendency to have some sort of a compassion. When I am talking with this person, I have a tendency to get a side of a jealousy in my mind. When I am talking with this particular person, I have a kind of a loving friendliness toward this person when I am talking. So likewise, even when we are talking with different people, so it is not the same kind of a mentality we have. So depending on our previous experiences with that person, and depending on our preconceived ideas, various perceptions, as a result of that, we are in a way projecting a different picture to the situation. So if we can understand that honestly, if we can understand that clearly, so why, what is the added part? What is the constructed part? So what is the sort of introduced part? So there is a kind of a conversation going on about a kind of a present phenomena, but I am unnecessarily adding my previous experiencing with this person to this picture. So these are in a way some interesting points that we can recognize, those actually helpful to understand our own weaknesses, our own biased attitudes. And they are the ones actually not making us to get correct decisions. Because whenever we are taking decisions, those likes and dislikes really matters. Those likes and dislikes come and color the picture. As a result of that, we can't take the correct decision. Our decision is fairly biased. But on the other hand, if we can honestly understand our certain tendencies in ourselves, our certain biases operating in the mind, then we are careful. At least we can step back. We can have mindfulness and look at the picture more broadly in an unbiased way. Then we are in a better position to have a correct decision. So likewise, we can explain this in many different ways. It's a very rich area to discuss. I hope that I answered your question.
Yes, Bhante. So in other case that I felt was, we take things like mind, you know, self-concept.
Yes.
That is the other thing. So it's my country, you know, something like that. So that's why that the clinginess and all those things comes, you know, my people are suffering, my country is suffering, some things like that. Actually, in taking into account as per the Buddha's, you know, teachings, actually birth is a first suffering. Like, you know, it's starting from there, then everything is suffering. So we don't see it in that angle because the way that we were taught when we were small, everything is like positive concept, you know. Everything comes up, okay, that's good, that's good, that's good. So we're looking forward for good, good, and good. But actually, we are running behind dukkha all the time. We don't feel as dukkha. So even, you know, hunger is a dukkha. And we didn't feel it. We love when we see food, like, nicely decorated with, you know, all those fruits and nuts. Like, oh, that's yummy, and I like it, I want it. And once you eat it, you feel like it's very discomfort because it's too much of sugar and oil and all those things. But the way that we were taught, and, you know, the way that the world is, you know, rolling around, it's always giving the wrong concept. We digest that concept. So it's very hard to unwind it. So we are wind with certain, like, you know, in a machine is wind with, you know, a spring, so like that. We are wind with those things, and it's very, very hard way that we have to unwind it, you know, at least starting now. It's a huge challenge that I felt like, you know, when we meditate, when we listen to a Dhamma talk, we take it to mind, okay, hereafter I will think like this. And I'm not going to think like the other rest of the people, you know, who are just running behind the, you know, all those physical things. But when come to again to the zero, it's really hard. It's really, really hard. That's what I felt.
Yeah. Actually, I agree with you. So that is where Buddha mentioned that even the Jata Sutta, how one can unentangle this entanglement. So directly ask the same question. So there are various entanglements available in this world. So it may be generated internally, it may be generated externally. And how one can unentangle these entanglements. So this is an interesting question. So how much we internally produce a lot of suffering. So how we are creating a self. How we are unnecessarily put our hands sometimes. How we are too much thinking. How we are sort of adding our own preconceived ideas to the picture. That also makes a lot of suffering. So likewise, there are many attributes that we have to recognize, and each and every part we have to address carefully, and we can't do it in a rush as well. So that is also an interesting point. So even though we understand it, as you correctly mentioned, you can't immediately answer. So you understand, okay, this is the issue, this is the shortcoming. I have kind of a tendency, but it doesn't eliminate immediately. So you have to again and again look at it, again and again you have to understand it, again and again you have to understand the disadvantages of that kind of a thinking, and slowly only it may become weaker and weaker. So it's a very careful process that we have to undergo. But just by in a rush, just because of just using mere determination, one can't do it. Determination also necessary. And continuous practice also quite necessary. And on top of that, kind of a ongoing mindfulness. and always being mindful. And mindfulness appear like a kind of a protector to the mind, but always present, and it's giving the proper perspective about the situation, and accordingly we take the correct decision. Yeah, thank you.
Yes, Mante. The mindfulness is like a shield. That's what I felt like. In any case, in any scenario, if you bring your mindfulness, it's better as a shield. So you'll be getting protected.
Yes.
And other people might be, you know, relating all those stories. So often, actually, I hear like people known to me dying in Sri Lanka, like, you know, my friends, and like that. So when they ring and tell them, you know, they cry. I was just thinking, can I cry too? But, you know, understand the reality, okay, this is it, or no, that person will die anyway, one day. Only thing it's death is a bit sooner because of this kind of pandemic. But I have to show that I'm sad also, you know, then I have to act and say, okay, yeah, this and that. So jump into that person is, you know, swimming in a sadness pool. And I can't actually stay on the bank and, you know, just have a look and watch that person is, you know, drowning. So to either jump and drown or take the person out. They can't take the person out because it's in a huge sorrow. But then have to act and say, okay, I'm so sad that you're, you know, jumping in a, you know, sad pool and then trying to drown. But, you know, it's really helpless to, you know, just to say to people, come on, think about this. This is the reality. So very hard to, you know, get people to be mindful. But, you know, I look at my mind and think, okay, this is it. So I learned this and I understand this. This is it. And I mean, next day it can be me. I mean, whoever. And so I thought, you know, now we have to act. So we have to act the rest of the life in front of other people, because like it's hard to leave those people as well when they come and say you their sorrows. We have to listen. So listening and then saying yes, 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 and that's it. Can't help anymore. Just say yes. So it's like the drama of, you know, acting now. That's kind of I was confused before, but I think now I'm getting comfortable with that acting part as well. Is that the right way, Mante?
Because in a way, I mean, one aspect of the practice is to have empathy, that when someone is going through some suffering, so we also feel it. It doesn't mean that we are becoming somewhat, say, astonished or having some senseless insensitivity or something like that. Rather, we also sensitive. We also feel they are suffering. We also have the same kind of situation. And as you mentioned, the next victim could be myself. And so likewise, we can put ourselves onto their situation. So likewise, we can understand. So actually, the person, when they are telling us, when they are sort of crying in front of us, so that very crying, that very expression helps them to recover. Because that is also one important thing. Because if they are holding all these grievances and all these suffering to themselves, then they are utterly helpless. But we are kind of a medium at that time, so I am simply listening. It doesn't mean that I am going to sort of save him or to resurrect the dead person. It is not. But I am simply a mindful listener at that time. So that really helps, because I am showing my empathy towards that person, and that person also feel comfortable being with me and talking to me. And so he is crying. Doesn't matter. He is crying and again telling, again and crying, again and telling. So I have to be sort of sympathetic at that situation, because that really helps him. If he is not crying and if he is not expressing all his views, then it is actually accumulated in his heart. So that can become a cancer. That can become real tragic to him. So rather than keeping all those emotions in his mind, he's now expressing them out, and that is quite helpful. So we don't need to do much, but simple time, giving some time for him, giving some sharing their thoughts, And that also really helps. Yeah.
Yes, Bhante. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
I agree to you.
Yes. So we can go to the next part, next person.
Okay, I'd like to invite Don to please ask the next question.
Thank you. Hi, Bhante.
Yes.
When I was listening to the today's sutta, I felt it like it's a kind of a continuation of Madhupindika Sutta, in the sense like in the Madhupindika Sutta we saw continuous thinking and the proliferation can kind of take over the person, override the person. Now today's sutta explained what happened after that. Like,
yes.
Okay. Then and so that was like a very nice continuation. So Bhante, does that mean even for this, what happened, like, according to teaching today, even for that, the same answer as for the Madhupindika Sutta, in the sense where at the time of contact, we try to see the non-value or non-attachment side of it? Is that still the answer to today's?
No. So there's a very interesting answer Buddha gives in this sutta. That's what I want to share maybe on next week. Because that is another interesting practice that Buddha recommends to God Sakka. And so that is we'll explore on next week. And that is really interesting answer Buddha giving. And it looks at our practice in a different angle. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I'll wait for next week.
Yes.
Thank you. And Bhante, for the next question, I'm just going to read the message that I received.
Yeah.
Sometimes proliferation, to be fruitful, it has to happen effortlessly. Effortlessly meaning not mindfully. That's a question. And then just allow thinking. I have gained a lot on mental proliferation while knowingly one certain aspect. I assign this to talent for imagination. This is creativity, isn't it? The car manufacturer is definitely for mental proliferation. Otherwise, how can he come up with such a good product? I feel students have to have this. Otherwise, it will be a stereotype set of breed.
Yeah, interesting question. So now, the point is that, I can accept that mental proliferation, we can interpret as our creativity, our imagination, and all sorts of names that we can give. Actually, we can give prizes, and we are giving all these medals and all these things. Now, say, for example, you see someone, and now you start to think, and you are writing a poem, and you are writing a story, you are writing a novel, and you are directing a film. So all sort of things are there. So people are doing all these things and they call it creativity, and they give a lot of awards to all this, and that is the typical norm. We can accept it. But on the other hand, don't you think that the creativity comes from a silenced mind? So this is another aspect that we didn't think too much. Actually, we always think that the creativity comes by thinking. So we have to think again and again, and that thinking produces creativity. So that is the typical accepted norm. But on the other hand, there is kind of a potential in our mind. It may be kind of incorporated with our intuition, not with too much thinking. So with the practice, it is not that we are going to become sort of blunt people. Rather, creativity is available, but it is not through sort of unnecessary mental proliferation, but rather it may be coming through our intuition. And say, for example, when someone wants to have a good product, it is not that you being with the others and arguing with others and going through various books and putting your mind into a huge amount of information, and then you come up with the product. So that is also another approach that people are taking, that maybe we can say the common approach that people are taking. But on the other hand, sometimes what they do. So, assume that you went through kind of a brainstorming session, you couldn't come up with a solution and you stop it. and you all go away, and all of a sudden, suppose you are having a tea with a very relaxed mood, and you take a break and you go for a, say, your lunch to a dinner, or you are simply resting on your bed, and your mind has given some sort of a rest. At that time, immediately you get a brilliant idea, because your mind has got that inherent skill. So we, in a way, have given overemphasis to thinking, and we think that all the mental proliferation is the only method available. But on the other hand, Buddha's teaching helps us to see it in a different angle. So when mind is having its inner, say, composure, when it has its own kind of silence, so that also is quite potential. That also is quite fruitful, rich, to produce a kind of a very good decision, to take a very good decision, and to have a brilliant idea. So that is also there. We should not forget that. So therefore, I can't agree that all the creativity comes through proliferation. We can't agree on that, actually.
Thank you, Bhante. So for the next question, I'd like to invite Chitra.
Yes, thank you. Can you hear me, Jennifer?
Yes, loud and clear.
Thank you. Last time I was having a problem with this computer. So Bhante, my question is that you said, or whether I misunderstood, I don't know, from our six senses, when we see, hear, and so forth, there is a kind of mental proliferation. Did you see that?
No. What I want to tell is that what we see, as I take an example, say I'm looking at a car. So this car is something already constructed. So assume it may be a single person or many people. So they thought about it, they designed it, and they come up with the design, and ultimately they produce something. And this is what we see. So it is not a kind of a very fundamental quality that we see. It is not an element characteristic what we see. Rather, what we see is a kind of a constructed or compact something. So it's a generated, or it's a product of mental proliferation. So when we see someone else's product of mental proliferation, it has a tendency to generate mental proliferation in ourselves as well. Because what we see is very conventional, very complex, and it has a lot of aspects included into it. As a result of that, our mind immediately triggers that inner quality of mental proliferation. Because what we see also is a product of mental proliferation. And now it triggers in ourselves further thinking. So that's what I want to sort of share with you.
Now, when we see, for instance, something in nature like a tree or something, then there hasn't been human mental proliferation into that, but we can still have mental proliferation by having daydreaming about it and having ideas about it. So that also we can make our own mental proliferation. Would that be right?
Definitely. That is what mentioned in the Madhupindika Sutta. Say we take the very sort of very fundamental kind of an input, and on top of that we are adding our own likes and dislikes. We are doing a lot of constructions, and all our own intervention interference is there. Then we do mental proliferation.
So you of course we have gone through all of this, in the sense you said we have to apply mindfulness first with effort, and then you also said doing the vipassana and having a silent mind, and also during daily life to have the contemplation. But does that mean that then if we do more meditation, we are going to be more in control of the mental proliferation? Would that be definitely. So would that mean that people who don't meditate regularly have more mental proliferation?
Yes, why not?
So the remedy then, from what I'm hearing, is that we should we'll do silent contemplation and meditation to get over, to prevent this mental proliferation. That is ultimately the remedy.
Correct. You can say like that, because as Buddha mentioned, and Buddha actually give a very interesting verse. I mean, it's mentioned in the Dhammapada, and there he mentioned, papanchabhirata paja nippapancha tathagata. And he overlooks the whole realms, not only the humans, not only the gods, everywhere. And he see this inherent tendency in the minds of the people. Papanchabhirata paja. So they are delighted in mental proliferation. So they want to think, they want to proliferate. So they are fond of mental proliferation. So such a tendency is there among people. But the opposite is mentioned for the Buddha, nippapancha tathagata. So he is free from mental proliferation. So you can see the difference. So don't think that sometimes we probably take a wrong idea as in the previous question. So the mental proliferation avoids any kind of creativity. It is not. Now if you consider the Buddha's teaching, it has a lot of aesthetic aspects. It has a lot of philosophical aspects. It has a lot of rich, technical aspects. So many things are there. So he being free from mental proliferation, he was able to give a very beautiful interpretation to a very, important, significant liberation spiritual aspect. So that indicates what a kind of a potential he had. But he is free from mental proliferation. So we can understand. So he is showing us the path to come to the such kind of a level. I'm not telling that we have to become a Buddha. But the path is shown to overcome mental proliferation. And when the mind is in a such kind of an equipoise, so it also has the potential to come up with various creative ideas, to have a better solution, to give brilliant ideas. So such potential is there in the mind.
One of the other ladies who said, when you go deep into all of this, it is sometimes you have to be like apart from the general population. She said she has to pretend to be sad, and makes it difficult to move in society sometimes, you know, Bhante?
Rather than telling pretending, can't we really feel another person's suffering?
Yeah, we can.
Exactly. So it is not that we are trying to become rude, or we are trying to become indifferent, we are trying to become insensitive. One can become sensitive, one can have a lot of compassion, empathy, and you can still have your sort of freedom of mind. So empathy is one aspect of the mindfulness practice. So when you are developing mindfulness, you have your own emotions. You can understand your own emotions. As a result of that, later you can understand another person's emotions. And as a result of that, you develop a fair amount of empathy. So while being empathetic, you can actually help another person for him to have a kind of a person to share their sorrows. Because people nowadays don't have that time. I mean, they are quite busy. Assume that your friend is coming and they want to share something. I mean, they are going through some tragic situation and they want to share that with you. So at that time, we should have time. I mean, it is not that we are going to completely remove that their sorrow, but rather we have enough time to dedicate for them as a friend, as a practitioner. So then they are crying and they may be talking utter nonsense, but at least we have some time to listen to them. And actually that very, what you call the catharsis, that they are honest explanations. I mean, those may be foolish, but doesn't matter. That itself helps them to recover.
Yes.
Yes.
Only sometimes, like, you know, the more you go into the Dhamma, you know, sometimes you have to step back from some of your associates who think differently and who want to go enjoy sensual pleasures and, you know, have enjoy themselves. And so you have to step back from that company, you know, like you have to keep moving back sometimes, you know, and sometimes you have to be on your own, and sometimes it's a bit difficult.
Yeah, I mean, it has both aspects. I mean, you need to have your own seclusion to your own benefit and to strengthen your mind. And that is one aspect, true. But on the other hand, we have to be a part of the society. We have to have our relationship with others. And we have to be a good person. I mean, it doesn't mean that we are completely withdrawing from the society and being a utterly selfish person. Rather, the practice has to have kind of a balance. So you are having your inner strength to bear all these things. Now, when Buddha has established the Sangha society, now he could actually be alone rather than establishing Sangha society. But when thousands and thousands of monks are coming to the order, so Buddha has to face so many questions. I mean, they have their own grievances. There are certain issues. So some are coming and complaining, some are coming and crying, and some are trying to disrobe. So Buddha was able to bear all these situations. So that indicates that maturity that Buddha had through his practice. So it is not only Buddha now. Say, for example, Venerable Sariputta, Venerable Moggallana. So likewise, there are such arahants. So they actually have their inner strength to maintain their stability and at the same time to help others as well. I mean, I am not telling that we are arahants to do that into that level. But at least slowly to our capacity, we should have some helping hand rather than completely withdrawing from the whole situation.
Yes, Bhante. Yeah. We have to move with all the foolish people also. Otherwise, it's difficult.
Yes, yes. And because we were in the same situation, no? So, I mean, if someone else didn't listen to us, when I was a fool, if my teacher, if my, say, Kalyana Mittas didn't listen to me, how can I develop?
Yes.
Isn't it? So it is not that I am born enlightened. No. So I am a kind of a born fool. So at that time I have to talk to another person. So he has to compassionately listen to me, all my grievances, all my foolish ideas. Then he is talking to me, he is guiding me. So as a result of that, I am able to look at my own problems, issues and all my tendencies, and slowly I am sort of recovering. So likewise, so after we also have some skill developed, so we have to be another Kalyana Mitra to another person. Then only the sasana may thrive.
Exactly, Bhante. That's good. Yeah, we have to keep moving with everybody, but remain silent when it's necessary.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah, okay. I think we have come to the end of today's program. And thank you very much for your active participation. And by listening to Dhamma and participating in Dhamma discussion, we were able to accumulate some merits. So let's share these merits with reciting traditional verses. Ettavata ca amhehi sambhataṃ punya sampadaṃ sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambhataṃ punya sampadaṃ sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambhataṃ punya sampadaṃ sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantaṃ anumoditvā chiraṃ rakkhantu sāsanaṃ. Akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantaṃ anumoditvā chiraṃ rakkhantu desanaṃ. Akasattha ca bhummattha devānāga mahiddhika punyantaṃ anumoditvā chiraṃ rakkhantu mam paraṃ. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satan samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satan samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satan samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.